Welcome to the V-Wave Podcast. This podcast is brought to you by River Runners for Wilderness and is created by a cast of river lovers who understand the river resource comes first. On the shoulders of a healthy river, do we recreate ourselves? What comes second is river access, a very thorny V-Wave, all in itself. The V-Wave discusses these things and river ecology, recent river trips, river history, river management, and new changes on rivers. Have a topic you'd like to hear more about or help discuss? Get in touch with me, your host, Tom Martin, at rrfw.org. That's T-O-M-M-A-R-T-I-N at rrfw.org. Special thanks to Char and Trev, who came up with this idea.
I'm visiting today with John Weisheit. And John is one of the co-founders of a nonprofit called Living Rivers. John's been a student of the Colorado River and its many tributaries for almost 50 years. And is well known in the river community for his knowledge about the river and the river ecosystem. I wanted to call John today because Glen Canyon National Recreation Area just put out a press release about putting Rotenone into the Colorado River below Glen Canyon Dam. So I thought I would call John and see what John has to say about this. Good afternoon, John. How are you today?
I'm well, Tom. Thank you very much for asking, and thank you for including me in your podcast today.
Well, thank you for joining us. John, what are your thoughts of this latest attempt to kill a certain type of fish in the Colorado River below Glen Canyon Dam?
Well, I have a lot of thoughts about it. You mentioned I'm a student of history, and that's where I'd like to take this podcast for the moment, is because Rotenone is what created the Endangered Species Act. The story is Paul Miller, who's the man who discovered the humpback chub in 1948. You know, before that, people didn't even know the animal existed, except for maybe archaeologists who dug their bones out of middens. Mm-hmm. But you know, he was from he was the father of Colorado River Basin fish, and that are now endangered. And in 1962, when Flaming Gorge Dam was about to be completed, the Fish and Wildlife Service from both the state and the federal agencies decided to use Rotenone to kill all the trash fish, the trash fish to them included the native species carp and catfish. And of course, carp and catfish are non-native animals, but they're to the Colorado River Basin, but you know, they're not, you know, what this was about killing the undesirable fish and stocking the rivers with the fish that fathers and sons like to catch on weekends or vacations. And so, you know, this was about completely altering the natural ecosystem of the Colorado River, which is, 6 million years old.
So John, was the intent of the Flaming Gorge fish kill to kill the, as you call them, trash fish, the native fish, and then to stock the now fishless waters with a sport fish or sport fishes?
Yeah, so now they're doing it the other way around. But, you know, it's still, you know, not looking at what the real problems are when it comes to ecosystem management.
Okay.
They're just going from one crisis to another.
Okay.
You know, so, you know, why are these fish in there in the first place? That's what needs to be discussed. who's supposed to be in charge of this? And that is the Adaptive Management Program for the Grand Canyon, of which Grand Canyon National Park and Glen Canyon National Recreation Area is managed by the Park Service. But they have different missions because one's a natural ecosystem and one is not. One is a river corridor occupied by Lake Powell.
Okay. So below the dam, how did these fish get through the turbines in the first place?
Well, because of the low reservoir elevation and close proximity to the intakes for the spillways.
So do these fish typically...
the turbine penstocks.
Okay, do these fish normally stay in the warmer waters of the reservoir when, if the reservoir's at toward full pool, would be near the top of the stack, and the turbine intakes are down, further down in the water column, where these fish aren't normally there? Is that the concept?
Well, yes. You know, it depends on the species of fish, but for, you know, you have to realize that the agencies that are running the Roatenon program are the same agencies that stocked Lake Powell with non-native fish.
So they put the fish in over here, and they run around and kill them over there?
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, there's nuances, of course, about who's individually to be, you know, involved in these management plans. Those things change over time, but, you know, we're talking about fish biologists, you know, creating the problem, and now there is a problem because of their previous actions, and now they're, you know, the way they're solving it is something that they tried once before, and it backfired and created the Endangered Species Act.
I was just remembering the Flaming Gorge incident. They put in so much Roatenon way up at the dam that poison, if you will, killed fish in Dinosaur National Monument, what, 50 miles downstream?
Yeah, there's a book about it. It's called The World's Most Synthetic Fish. It's about the rainbow trout. It's written by a student of Patricia Limerick.
Okay.
I highly recommend it.
Okay.
But the way we got the Endangered Species Act is this Paul Miller, this ecologist, that he wrote an article in the New York Times, an op-ed, and Wallace Stegner read the op-ed, and he had monthly meetings with Stuart Udall, and he shared the op-ed with Stuart Udall, and Udall was enraged. And anyway, this was in 1962, and 2 years later he used the newly created Wilderness Act to create the first endangered species list, and the humpback chub and the Colorado pike minnow are on that list.
Okay.
That was 1967. So this 1967 was almost 70 years ago, and we're still haven't solved the native fish problem.
Okay.
And we have a lot more dams and a lot more exotic fish. This is a problem that is escalating, and this one little tiny measure below Glen Canyon Dam isn't going to solve the problem. It will temporarily. How many times do they have to do this treatment? The reason why I'm concerned is because the states and the municipalities of the Colorado River have all said that Lake Powell is going to be low, if not empty, for the rest of the century.
Okay.
So are we going to just drip Roatenon into the Colorado River below Lake Powell, Glen Canyon Dam, for the rest of the century?
What? So, in theory, in air quotes here, Roatenon is not harmful to non-aquatic species. That would be include humans and all the wildlife that drinks out of the Colorado River below the this slough where they're actually doing this poisoning. What are long-term studies of this stuff?
Well, I don't know. Maybe that's good, because now we can invite somebody else to join your podcast.
Okay.
But obviously the secret to pollution is dilution. I mean, it is a pollutant. It is toxic. But by the time it gets to a municipal water supply, it's probably in quantities that aren't going to cause health effects. And
the first municipal water supply below where they're putting this stuff in is about 10 miles downstream at Lee's Ferry, where there's a huge amount of water taken out of the river. It is stored in a giant tank. It serves a number of residences and thirsty river runners that are filling up 5-gallon jugs all day long, day after day after day, besides watering the orchards out there at Lonely Dell. So that's the first municipal water supply right on the line there.
Yeah. Is that a well pumping water out of the gravels of the Colorado River?
Yes.
There's some filtration. Maybe they could stop pumping while the poison goes downstream. But that, have they even thought of alerting the people of Lee's Ferry this is happening? I don't know. That's another good question to ask for another individual.
Okay. And I suppose they would say, the dilution is going to be enough. It's going to happen so fast that for 10 miles, it's going to dilute itself out there.
Yeah. I think, here's a good analogy, Tom. Like, we had a water scarcity problem in 1902, and the decision from the Reclamation Act by Congress was we're going to start building a bunch of dams. And they built dams in the lower basin of the Colorado River, and then they built dams in the upper basin of the Colorado River, like Glen Canyon Dam. And now we're back to having a water scarcity issue. So my question to the world is obviously building dams doesn't end water scarcity issues. And very likely it's as we have too many dams, and we have what we've done in the meantime is planted exotic fish in every reservoir in the Colorado River as a result of these dams. We realized our mistake when the Endangered Species Act was passed, and now we're trying to fix the mess, but are we really? I mean, they're still stocking non-native fish throughout the Colorado River Basin.
Right.
The reason why I know that is because everybody's putting them in their freezers. So maybe we need to restore the ecosystem by taking out some dams. That is what I would like to see, because that would disadvantage the smallmouth bass they're trying to eliminate, because they can't live in they're predators that hunt by sight. If the river's muddy, which is the natural state of the Colorado River for the last 6 million years, that is what will disadvantage the non-native fish, and it will advantage the native fish, because that's what they've been living in for the last 6 million. Well, they're not that old. I think they're 3 million years old. So the point is that I think we have too many dams, and we have too many exotic fish, and that's how we solve the problem. We take out some dams, and we get rid of the non-native fish. We stop stocking them.
Bingo. That would be so you wouldn't have to do anything per se to sort out the problem with the non-native fish, except for the catfish and the carp, who aren't site feeders, are they?
Yeah, that's true. And I live in Moab, and I think we were the first ones to introduce catfish. I think it was in 1903. I think it was the mayor of Moab that did that. So, I take some responsibility for that. So Well, I think, Tom, what I'm trying to say is instead of putting out these little tiny fires, because we're going to have to do that from here on out.
Right.
Is we need some big major changes in the way we do things. And, you know, and one is what's wrong with the native fish? Why do we have to stock fish that don't belong here? Never did belong here. And why do we have so many truncated ecosystems interrupted by dams? Which have a lifespan.
Right. Yes.
By the way. Because this is a muddy river, has been for a long time. It's already eroded half the Colorado Plateau away. And most of that sediment is in the Gulf of California where it belongs, but now it's in all the reservoirs that we've built.
Right.
So, you know, what are we going to do when we lose flood control because our reservoirs are filled with sediment? What are we going to do when we don't have a place to store water, which is why we built the dams in the first place, because all the empty space is occupied by sediment? You know, and when is this going to happen? It doesn't matter. It's happening right now, and there's a day of reckoning. And what are we talking about that? No. We're talking about a short-term remedy to get rid of a non-native fish in a specific reach in a national park management area.
Your point is well made, that this is not going to be a one-and-done deal. Those fish are going to continue to blow through the dam. Yeah, some of them will find themselves in this little backwater where they're going to poison them, but many of them won't, and they will continue to work their way down, well, all the way to the confluence of the Paria if the Paria is cloudy, or they'll keep going down to the LCR if the LCR is cloudy. But if it's not, they'll keep going there all the way down to the next reservoir downstream.
Right.
And they will be eating everything in sight. Well, because they can see. They'll be eating all the blind fish.
Yeah. So I think we need long-term management plans. They need to be well-financed, and they need to be executed with tenacity. And instead of doing all this spot check temporary stuff that, you know, just annoys me to no end. This is an adaptive management program is supposed to think ahead and stop these things from even happening in the first place.
Hmm.
There's that argument. You know, they knew this day was coming.
Well, that begs a question. Do you think this adaptive management concept is working?
Oh, absolutely not. It's embarrassing to even. I listened to their meeting last week, and, you know, it's excruciatingly painful to listen to the back and forth. It's, you know, you can tell that it's dysfunctional just by the conversations they have.
Okay. So between now and getting our trip together to remove a number of the dams, I mean, what would be the first one to go? Would that be Glenn? And is the way to remove it basically tunneling around it? How do you see that? And if that was the case with Glenn, where else would you go? How many dams would you remove to start looking at, as you point out, we built a ton of dams, we've really grown a huge population, and now we're out on this technological edge of not enough water and too many people. How would you back us out of this?
Well, that's a big Pandora's box. I mean, first of all, we have to realize that the human species has way too many people, and it takes too many resources to support this population, and it's putting ecosystems at risk.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, we have to think about family planning, number one. Number two is, we dams have to come out because the day comes when they no longer can provide the functions that for which they were built, which is flood control and water storage. So that day of reckoning is coming, and there's absolutely no plan about how that's going to be done or how much it's going to cost. I can tell you it's going to be 7 times more expensive than it did to put that infrastructure in the first place. You know, so where's the money for this? You know, where? Why aren't I'm the third generation for that of beneficiaries from this dam.
Okay.
So 3 generations have passed with no cost recovery whatsoever for the day of reckoning. In other words, the future has to pay for this. We get right. All the benefits, they get all the costs, and they without the benefits. So, I mean, the way it's set up is unjust, you know, and so, you know, this is an equity issue as well.
How do you mean?
Because, when this infrastructure was put in, there was probably only 2 million people in the Colorado River Basin.
Okay.
Dependent on the Colorado River. Now there's 40 million. The 2012 Basin Study says there's going to be 60 million in the next couple decades. I mean, how are we going to support these people when we're already suffering from water shortages? And crashing ecosystems. I mean, we've already, you know, how many more people do we have to disappoint?
Right.
Because of our lack of consideration for the way things are going to be in the next, by the end of the century, especially with under accelerating global warming.
Right.
I mean, we've got huge issues.
Yes. Yeah. No, huge I definitely issues. See that.
And they're not being discussed. Not robustly.
So do you see, again, I'm kind of coming back to this, putting the pesticide, this poison, in this slough area, knowing that smallmouth bass, a number of those fish will go right past that slough. Work their way downstream. Even with the Rotenone attempt to control the population in this back eddy, do you see the population of the rest of the fish crashing? Can striped bass survive in the Colorado main stem between Glen Canyon Dam and Lake Mead?
Well, they already are. I remember talking to Richard Valdez about this. He was pulling stripers out in above Glen Canyon Dam and below Glen Canyon Dam. So,
right, and the stripers have coming. The striped bass are coming up from Mead, and they've made it up quite a ways. Randy's Rock. That was decades ago, and in theory they've gone out further. But that's a different type of bass. This is the smallmouth.
Yeah, right.
Which sound to be a little more predaceous than the stripers. Is that correct?
No, I'm not really sure. I just know that's bad.
Okay. Bad because they're another fish, like the striped bass and like the trout, that use their eyes to eat other fish. They see them, they go after them.
This much I do know is that, you know, the food base of the Colorado River system is not generous anymore. Because dams have, you could say, robbed the natural carbon input of the Colorado River system. You know, that's part of the sediment that's accumulating at the bottom of all the reservoirs.
Got it.
You know, so it's a nutrient-deprived system. And so it's a system that doesn't have enough food for non-native and native fish, period. You know, so there's going to be competition for food. And how do you make more food in the Colorado River? Take out some dams. Let the driftwood flow through. I mean, let the leaf litter and the carbon-based, you know, things. That's how ecosystems work. They need fertilizer.
Right.
And that's what the other bad thing about dams is they take that carbon cycle out. So So not only are we affected, I mean, there's an abnormal carbon cycle in our atmosphere, and there's one in our reservoirs and truncated rivers, you know. It doesn't look bright for anything living on this planet.
Yeah, certainly the creatures that swim in the Colorado River. Besides the larger picture, but yeah.
Well, excuse me. Yeah, it reminds me of something that Stuart Udall said. He said laws to improve animal, water, air are laws to help humans.
Right.
And so when we don't want to help fish, what we really are saying is we don't want to help ourselves as a human species.
Mm.
We somehow don't seem to understand that we're part of this biological sphere.
Right.
We're not separate from it. So we don't even understand our place in this ecology.
I wonder as well, my running assumption, I'm going to go back to this reach of river, 13, 14 miles long between Glen Canyon Dam and Lee's Ferry. There's a trout fishing operation going on there. Is the state still stocking trout below the dam, or has that stopped?
No, that's stopped.
Okay.
That doesn't mean they're not stocking in other reservoirs upstream or downstream.
Right. But I was just, I know for a while there was a trophy trout fishery going on there. Because this rotenone is going to kill a lot of things. I mean, whatever's in there is, chemical is not specific to one species of fish.
Well, yeah, I went to Willow Beach Fish Hatchery last November, and I know I went there to see to see the native fish, and there was an aquarium there with the native fish, and that was very delightful. But when I went to look at the breeding tanks, I saw nothing but trout.
Okay.
I didn't see one game. So I asked staff, I go, why are there no endangered fish in your tanks? And they go, right now we're pumping out trout. So it's happening. You know, for those who don't know where Willow Beach is, that's on Lake Mojave.
This is below the Hoover Dam.
Which is below Hoover Dam.
Just below. Yeah, okay.
So, I mean, they're still doing it. You know, they were when I was a child.
Okay.
Nothing's changed.
Okay, well, clearly there's a lot of work to do. It thank you very much for going over this, because it does rock me back on my heels to ponder the fish that are being killed below the dam were stocked above the dam. So the fish get poured in, they go through a turbine, and then they get killed. And that's you got to kind of rock back on your heels and go, wait a minute, why are we doing this?
Yeah, I think you should interview Charles Ukulele. He has a last name like mine. One that's easy to mispronounce. I would talk to Charles. You know, he wrote a paper with Eric Kuhn and Jack Schmidt. They're saying we need to bypass Glen Canyon Dam and restore natural habitat as a solution to our fish crisis. I think they're right.
Okay.
And I think, I don't know, are you aware of that paper? It came out a month ago?
I don't think I am.
Oh. I'll send it to you.
Okay, good.
You should interview them. You should interview Schmidt. He's doing knee surgery right now. I'm sure he's feeling better by now.
Okay.
Maybe he wouldn't. But I'll send you that. I'll send you that paper. They're saying, yeah, muddy up the river to disadvantage sightseeing predators like bass and trout.
Well, that concept to muddy up the river has been talked about for decades, some sort of a slurry pipeline. And you talked about these resources that are supposed to be for water storage and flood control, and they're losing the battle of water storage as they sediment up. But well, one way to deal with that is to energize the sediment into a slurry and drop it over the dam below and let it work its way downstream to the next reservoir, or down to the Sea of Cortez. So this we've had these concepts. They've been around a long time. We just are not acting on them.
Right, yeah. Timothy Randall did a study for the Bureau of Reclamation out of the Denver office. They put these forward to the Adaptive Management Program. They decided they were too expensive, and they didn't happen.
This was how long ago?
Oh, I bet that was 13, 14 years ago.
Okay. And this was a concept to slurry up the river sections?
Yeah, they were going to evacuate reservoir sediment out of side canyons like Navajo, above Antelope Canyon.
Okay.
On the Navajo Reservation side near, well, where Navajo Generating Station no longer exists.
Right.
And there's a change.
Yes.
Who would have ever thought that thing would go down? And it did. So, and they decided that it was just too expensive, and they didn't do it. But see, here's the thing. The day is coming when you don't have any place to put floodwaters, and that's the other consequence of climate change. Is warming atmospheres means you can carry more water vapor, which means our floods are going to be either more frequent or higher in magnitude or both in the future. And so, that's another conversation we need to have. We, thanks to paleo flood scientists like Vic Baker, we now know that floods in the Colorado River are much bigger than what the dams were built for. So, in other words, we didn't have good science when we decided to build these dams. Now we have good science, and now we understand we have infrastructure that isn't really going to be around much longer, So, why aren't we having more meaningful conversations about the things that are really compelling and looming as it comes to, I'm not saying we need to protect the humpback chub, but we need to protect ourselves because we're the ones that are at the top of the food chain and we're the ones that are going to be vulnerable as well.
Right.
And so we have to have these conversations. We continue to put them aside and talk about, let other generations talk about this. That's a quote from DeFloyd Dominey when I think it's from a question from David Brower. What are you going to do? And he says, Dominey said, it's not our problem. It's future generations' problem.
That's
well,
right.
That's unfair.
That's right.
You can't dump our problems on future generations. That says a lot about Floyd Dominey. Number one, he had no high moral code. He only cared about this generation.
Right.
And he's gone.
Right.
He doesn't have to be responsible anymore for his bad decisions.
Right. Which the rest of us now looking around going, oh my gosh.
Yeah. Well, you and I are 70. About.
Right. We'll be.
I would like to leave this planet knowing it's going to be taken care of.
Right.
And it's not looking that way.
Well, with that, as a comma to put down for the day, because these topics are not going away and we will be talking about these things again in the future. Maybe this is a good time to say thank you so very much, John Weisheit, for your big picture, 30,000-foot view.
That's my job.
All right. Well, I'm glad you're doing it.
But thanks for having courage to interview such a person.
Pretty easy to do. I'm sure I'll be back. All right, John. Thank you so very, very much. And hold the line here, and we'll talk again.
Okay.